So what I am presenting on today on behalf of myself and my main colleague in Nigeria, Dr. Godson Ana, is a summary of what we've done and is a collaboration initially between Atlanta, Georgia and Ibadan, and now UMDNJ and Ibadan to, as the title suggests, promote environmental health and exposure science in urbanized areas of less developed countries, with Nigeria being the example and Ibadan being the focus because that's where the major medical school is for that country and for West Africa. So I have no relationships to disclose, but I will acknowledge the funding source. So this is just for the purpose of those getting continuing education credits. This is what appeared online, but we were told to do that, so I'll skip through this quick. This is a quick outline of what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to have a couple slides of acknowledgement, so I'll just say that up front because a lot of people are involved in this at different phases, and I'll also mention at the end where some of the students doing thesis projects are. And then just for those that are not as familiar with the geography, I'll have a couple maps just to sort of bring us into focus in Ibadan. And show you where we're doing some of the work, and then talk about the trips that I've made, which have been about 2 weeks each when you include the travel from the US over there and into Ibadan, always 7 days or 7 to 8 days on the ground, and then tell you about some of the work that's done because of those, in addition to the full course training and where the master's students are with the equipment I brought. I'm going to make sure I remember how to use this mouse. Okay, so these people have been involved since the beginning, and I just want to mention a few. Dr. Ana is the main colleague at this point, but Dr. Owoaje was instrumental in helping form the initial collaboration, even go for a Fogarty grant. And a lot of physicians in this country, including one of my former colleagues, were trained by Dr. Omokodi, and she's a well-known, very senior occupational medicine physician. These are some of my colleagues, both from Georgia and from Nigeria, who were part of the initial discussions when we were forming the collaboration and just trying to give us some ideas for how to further focus where we were going to do our work. And then just acknowledging some of the key people in the training I'm going to briefly describe, including the three faculty that actually gave lectures during that training and who continue to mentor some of the students in their projects. And Dr. Chendu was a senior resident, or what they call senior registrar, both years I was there, and he helped get some of the medical residents to become part of the training and helped us coordinate the schedule so they could be there for as much of it as possible. So here are the funding sources, and as I'm sure my other colleagues suggested, it is incredibly difficult to get funding for international work. I've been very fortunate when I was in Georgia that there was a strategic initiatives program because the provost for international affairs was a former ambassador at the time that Andrew Young was an ambassador, and so there was certainly a connection for doing work in certain parts of the world. And then, you know, he also gave us some advice for how to apply to other things. Of all the things I've applied for in Georgia, only one came through, the Atlantic Philanthropies, and I'll be completely honest, I had a very good college friend working at Atlantic Philanthropies at the time, and he helped get it into that review round. And I think that connection is the reason we ended up getting a small grant, because if it just would have gone into the pile at their main office in either London or New York, probably wouldn't have even gotten that funding. And we've tried foundations in the US, and two are pending, but 11 said no, and there's really no federal mechanism unless you have a Fogarty Center. Fortunately for UMDNJ, Mark Robson has one in Thailand. Unfortunately for me, that means I can't apply for something else, but Mark's doing great work in Thailand, so that's more important. So just a little bit of background, you know, one of the reasons that this collaboration really started was because of what young professionals like Dr. An and I, you know, learned during our training. You know, we're in a process of globalization. Things are occurring at much faster speeds, economic change, social change, as political change, but also just the ability to communicate by multiple forms of communication, removing all these barriers to some degree, making it possible to plan trips and trainings by email and or fax, and then making the trips and doing a few things on the ground before you get it going. And then there's these different forces, and when I, you know, teach graduate students about environmental health, both international and global, I try to talk about it on a geographic continuum, that what happens locally affects things globally and vice versa. Most of you know that's part of the title of Howie Frumkin's excellent textbook as well. So some of the issues that are facing less developed countries like Nigeria, and these are not new, to all of you, but you have rapid development. So when we refer to urbanization in the scope of Nigeria, at least from when I've been there, it's, you know, sprawling kind of situations, not necessarily building up, but building out. And, you know, Lagos is a well-known megacity, but, you know, Ibadan has also got a sprawl situation with, you know, millions of people probably, although officially you won't get those kind of numbers. And then you have built and physical environments which are burdened by pollution, especially of water and air, but also some soil because you have a lot of unpaved roads. And then some of the other issues which I'll mention later, like noise and heat stress and the lack of community level sanitation for handling solid waste, are major concerns. Millennium Development Goals, you know, include certain priorities. The ones I highlight here are the ones that I think are of most interest to my Nigerian colleagues and have driven some of the training and master's level or faculty-led research that we've done, mainly around water, indoor and outdoor air, near schools, and I'll show you schools are along main roads in a lot of these communities within Ibadan, and then some of the industrial chemical hazards and unintentional injuries due to the built environment and the prevalence of traffic. These are just two paraphrased statements by the sources below, which sort of further encouraged us to go ahead with a full week-long training, which is the idea that, you know, this comment that was made in a well-known peer-reviewed journal, EHP, about minor environmental health hazards. And then what really sort of excited me was when my colleague, John Stewart at Georgia State, who had formerly been a career person at CDC, was interviewed for an article, and he made the comment that environmental health education and training and practice initiatives should be expanded to Africa and the Caribbean less developed countries. And it was very timely that, you know, this article was being done around the time we were trying to form this collaboration. So we just felt we were sort of along the right steps. These are just two direct quotes cited from this article, because one of the things about Nigeria, and as I said before, is that they have very well-known medical training, but they're starting to build their capacity in terms of public health. And a lot of the people getting public health training are master's level after their physicians, or maybe right after an undergrad, which was still more health and treatment oriented. So these quotes, you know, a need to further educate health practitioners about environmental health. A medical approach alone is not sufficient. You know, talking about the economic, social, environmental components, a lot of people are talking about the social determinants of disease. So these very interdisciplinary viewpoints. So this was sort of just the title of this, you know, sort of partnership that we formed. We have a website which gives some more information and some photos about what's been done to date. I'm going to try to run through in 10-15 minutes what we've done. So just a little bit of geography. There's Nigeria in West Africa, you know, if you didn't know. Certainly one of the largest countries. The population estimate ranges somewhere in the 130-140. I've even seen now highs recently in travel advisories to 147 million, but we'll call it somewhere in the 140 million range. And, you know, just for those who were wondering, it was a former British colony. It's been independent for roughly 50 years. They're still in the same time zone. They do speak British English. So language, fortunately for me, was not a barrier. This is just a more focused map, which is from Lonely Planet, but it's just to show that Ibadan is, roughly speaking, depending on traffic and weather and how many security checkpoints you need to go through, about 3 hours driving from the outside of Lagos and a little more from the airport, you know, to the northeast, and Abuja is the capital. So Ibadan is a well-known, it's an older city, and it's home to the largest medical school in West Africa. So this is the best map that we were able to obtain of Ibadan. And the reason I was really interested in having a map is because once we identified traffic-related pollution, including noise, as one of the interests, I sort of wanted to get a sense of how this main road ran that connected Lagos to Abuja. And essentially the road, it's not on the map, but essentially it goes something from the southwest towards the northeast through this. And the IITA, where I was staying, and the university's hospital and main campus were all in this north quadrant. I can't tell you exactly where on the map, but it's in this north quadrant. And, you know, so, you know, when you're talking about, don't even ask me if we have GIS analyses for this kind of work, because just the mapping does not exist at a state or local level. This happened to just be the best we could find. But I just wanted to give you some context. So, you know, down here would be Lagos and up towards here would be Abuja. And this is all sort of urban sprawl. So over time, this is just growing. So this, I'm not going to read through this. We had a set of aims at the beginning of our collaboration that were part of that Fogarty grant. What we did is sort of refine those because I was fortunate enough to make the review round. And what Godson and MA and I learned from the review is that focus within one of the areas that we said we wanted to do work in and then have some specific projects within that area. And so we revised our aims to talk about training students and young medical professionals and having some research pilot projects by faculty and students as sort of determined here. And the main area, again, was traffic-related air pollution and noise and its impact on community settings. So we did take into account markets and some sanitation issues that were alongside the main roads. And then there have been some other things which have come up as well, just based on student interest. So just to give you a series of photos to give you a sense of what this visually looks like. You know, this photo is trying to show you the impact, not just of urban sprawl and traffic, but of poor emissions controls. So we're sitting in a Land Cruiser that, you know, we were driving around in, someone at the university had one. And I don't know if you guys can see, and we don't have the time to sort of do group discussion, but what we're looking at up a slight incline is actually a truck with an open top. And I know you can't see it, but there were workers sort of sitting along the side in benches, you know, sort of three sides. So as bad as that looks for us, and, you know, these vents weren't recycling air, so it was coming in, it was even worse for people sitting in the back of that converted pickup truck. But, you know, there's literature on how the road grade affects emissions. Well, on top of that, you just don't have emissions controls. So these are all the different criteria pollutants and toxics that we've learned about come out of traffic are right there. Other traffic-related things relate to what I would call potential for unintentional injuries. So we saw a lot of people riding motorcycles without helmets, and more importantly, two or more people on a motorbike in the middle of this densely populated traffic. And then in addition, if you see the photo on the left, there's barely a barrier, we'll call it, between the two lanes. And now in this case, you'll notice that it looks pretty similar to, you know, some of the British driving system. But there are no, you know, divisions between lanes, and there are roads where literally oncoming traffic is coming towards you. Some of the other things related to traffic-related air pollution are a lot of the schools are located along main roads. Why? Because the children can walk from their homes. Now, I'm not against kids walking, you know, in safe routes to schools, but in this situation, either they're walking to school, they're being dropped off in one of these types of vans that serve as their form of public transit. They don't have large buses or anything like that. And these buses also are, you know, overcrowded, have poor emissions controls. You know, they have to use windows for cooling because there's no AC. So any resuspended dust or emissions from other vehicles is coming back into the main cabin. But, and, you know, at the same time, you know, they take school very seriously. They're all in uniform and they all are pretty well behaved just waiting out there. So there's just this, you know, sort of, you know, I don't know, I don't want to say contradiction, but these sort of conflicting factors with a vulnerable population being considered. Some of the other things that we lost along the main route between Lagos and Ibadan and the freeway are, again, you know, sometimes you see people, just if there's small communities along the roadway, walking literally like there was a sidewalk there, which there's not. So that's a safety issue because he's not going to be able to maneuver. How many? Five? He's not going to be able to maneuver that wagon with each of those weighing, you know, I'm not quite sure how much 5 gallons of water or oil weigh, but figure there's about a dozen of those. And then also you can see here, you know, some of the situation in terms of the open air markets with the animals and any goods sold in these makeshift housing that really does represent the urban periphery outside Lagos. A little bit more about community sanitation. This picture here is out a little closer up to the picture I just showed you before, but it shows you the impact of indoor or semi-enclosed cooking areas that then not only are sources of outdoor air quality, but also impact the indoor environment. So we had this first course, and now I'm going to go a little quickly through some other photos. We had a short course training. This happens to be the poster that was in different sizes throughout their campus and at the hospital site. We had professionally printed locally certificates, so the design was Dr. Ahn and I in Word, but we let their printer get some of the funding to produce these things. And we had it signed by not just both of us and Dr. Owaje, but at the time, the dean of the medical school. Our goal was 20, but we ended up having 27. So we were very successful with the first few categories. We did not get any government or industry people, which was not a surprise to me, but that was my partner's goal. And we had several different community field visits as part of this week-long training, all near heavy traffic sites as listed. But we also wanted to broaden the scope beyond air and waste to water, so we were able to go visit a drinking water treatment plant. We were not able to get to these two other industries during the week. So they saw some things about advanced drinking water treatment for bottled water. So just to run through some photos, you know, part of collaboration building and what I learned is keeping promises, which is not the easiest thing. I sort of gave my word that I would be back within a year to do a training and I would somehow get funding to do that. I was able to do that, my other Georgia colleagues were not. So we presented some books to the dean for the library. And then this was part of the show and tell of all the various field equipment and various supplies that we brought for the students to use. And I did get everything through the airport. These are some of the photos we took during the site visit at the market. And what I'm trying to show here is at times I had to semi-conceal some of the microenvironmental monitoring equipment that was working real time with the data logger. What you can't see in my hand was the noise dosimeter, but you can sort of see, I can't really use that here, we have the air sampling inlet facing away from the bag for the particulate matter sampler. We connected a cyclone impactor for 2.5 just so that, you know, I wouldn't have what would otherwise look like maybe a bomb or something else open there in the market. So we tried to get some pilot data just to use as a teaching point of view when we went back into the classroom about sources and real-time monitoring. This is some of the semi-enclosed and indoor sort of issues regarding cooking and heating, but also the idea that even on the University of Bonn campus, there was some trash burning behind the homes. And even though this looks like a controlled burn, right off to the left of the photo are, you know, some of the housing, you know, with open windows or, you know, certainly a lot of potential for infiltration of the smoke into the home. This was behind an abattoir, and I won't go into more detail, but that was not necessarily a pleasant sight to see where the animals were roaming, essentially an open dump. And then I couldn't really do more than a group photo right inside the water treatment plant, but we were there and we got taken around by one of their microbiologists. But we also gave students a chance in small groups and then a large group to discuss what they learned on the trip and report back. So we gave them some public speaking experience, even if it was just among a group of 30. And then we had a whole several hour session of trying the equipment indoors, learning how to operate it, learning about the calibration and cleaning of some of it. In this case, I'm demonstrating the particulate matter sampler, how you do zero air calibration in the field and clean the impactor and other parts, because more or less it's gonna be a lot easier to bring particle counters there than full scale active sampling equipment. We also tried, we gave them GPS. That was something they wanted as part of the grant, but I showed them, because I'm a runner and a biker too, that the old fashioned way of measuring distance is pretty accurate. And so we walked along with two of them and the GPS, and they saw that pretty much you could use low-tech things to still collect data in the field. And that was important to me because, you know, if batteries fail or equipment fails or they're out there in the Harmattan season when it's windy or it's raining, you know, you're not always going to have the fancy GPS or some of this equipment that you'll be able to use. We had some pilot research. I'm not presenting data on that today because it's part of a paper about the training. But like I said, we had some real-time plots to show them how the samplers worked and also to show the impact of local sources on the levels being measured. And when I'm talking about real-time, imagine one day or a week-long plot where every 1 or 10 seconds you had a data point for carbon dioxide and all these other things listed here at these areas that I've listed. So this is actually my second, this actually might be my last slide. because of the time constraint compared to when we did this at the National Environmental Health Association, I can't show examples of data from each of the papers, either published in press or still in review. What I actually was more importantly I wanted to share is Dr. Anna was in the U.S. last week at the aerosol research conference for one of his other things with the med school in Chicago, and he gave me an update. Four thesis students are using the equipment I showed briefly before, not just for thesis projects finished this summer or that will be finished this December, but on things like health and noise from mobile phone use was an interest of one of the students who had started right when I went there in March 07. We gave him resources over time and he ended up conducting his own study. Looking at noise from power generators and other energy sources in the community. Also someone then doing CO2 levels indoor and outdoor, trying to understand the impact of different sources, and then measuring noise at different parts of the university and hospital campuses, which are near to and far away from their roadways. And what's interesting is there's actually a poster right now in the Environment Session Award session that's looking at New York City and doing the exact same thing, although there it's harder because you got the skyscrapers. So in closing, thanks for coming and being interested. I always like showing this slide last. One, because I think they were shocked that I was so willing to just try the food at some of the joint lunches we had during the training, which I didn't think was a big deal, but they all started laughing. And I said, Gossam, what have I done wrong? He's like, nothing, you actually tried and you didn't have to be coerced. You know, I was staying at IITA where they're growing crops throughout all of Africa. And then, of course, thankfully, we had some humor by the end. We were celebrating about 7 at night on Friday, and we had a couple of good joke tellers as well. So I got to learn about their culture on two different trips. So that's it, and I guess the group's going to have questions. So thank you for your interest.